Yes, we talk kinky sex with our panelists. We have Pierre and Catherine of BDSMCircle.com, along with Dane Stewart, who is an advocate and playwright and manages Montreal's pup group Woof MTL. We'll find out what that's all about as well. Before I begin the whole show here or this segment, I want to just share some statistics that I came across last week that I did share with some of our listeners already, but I wanted to share with you guys and get some of your input. And I thought it was really interesting. The headline was, "Most Americans have tried unconventional sex." And it goes on to describe all the different kinds of unconventional sex. But what I picked out was this. By age 50, 40% of Americans have experimented with oral anal sex, sphincter massage, fingering, toy insertions, or penis-anus intercourse. That's 40% of Americans, whereas there's only, if we look at the gay community, it's 10%, right? So, like, think for a minute. There's not, like, a lot of people make the association with anal play as somehow that it's gay. So that dispels that right there. Approximately 20% of American adults have engaged in consensual non-monogamy, so polyamory, threesome, swinging, group sex. And there were researchers at Indiana University that surveyed over 2,000 American adults and discovered that many enjoyed elements of BDSM. 30% enjoyed spanking. 22% enjoyed dominant submissive role-playing. 20% enjoyed being restrained or restraining. 13% enjoyed whipping and flogging. And the investigators also found that 43% had played sexually in public. When they looked at fantasies, more than half of Americans admit fantasies involving BDSM. More than half. And yet, when we do this kind of show, we still get, you know, we still get the kind of feedback like, this is sick, this is not normal, this is, or that I'm somehow a proponent of whatever, right?
It may not be normal for them.
Well, that's right. If you don't practice it, then everything else that everybody else does must be not normal. That's the thinking, right? That's the way many people do think. But then there was a Quebec survey, which I thought was really interesting. They found that over 45% have an interest in at least one type of sexual behavior considered, as they say, anomalous: voyeurism, fetishism, masochism. So what? And one third of them had experienced the behavior at least once. So one third of Quebecers, 45%, are interested.
Are we surprised?
Well, you're not. You're not. But I'm sharing it for our listeners because it seems like, look, I'm still always, I shouldn't really be surprised, but oftentimes when you guys are on the show, we do get those kinds of emails, right?
Yeah. And what is surprising is each time I talk to someone who's not BDSM but knows that we are, very often they would admit to have tried something or have some liking or interest. And
they'll share it with you because you tell them
because
they know
you're
open.
But, and this is why I know that there's more people that cares to admit that are interested in this. So this is why I find this funny.
What do you think, Dane, of these kinds of statistics?
Well, I'm not surprised by them. And I think that it comes back to how we are trained to perceive BDSM, to perceive kink. When you hear the term BDSM, automatically your brain goes to that vision of the dark dungeon with all of the whips and everything.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, at its core, BDSM doesn't have to be that, and kinky sex practices don't have to be that that dark dungeon sort of thing. You can engage in kinky behaviors and kinky sex without, you know, having to go that far down the spectrum. And I think as a society, if we allow ourselves to think about, practicing kink, about having sex in those alternative ways without having to go necessarily to that extreme, we can probably engage in some very healthy and fun play.
It's not even alternative anymore. That's the thing. Like, we talk about alternative play, but now the alternative is the extreme stuff. Because if half of the population is already thinking, engaging, wanting, that's no longer alternative.
Mm-hmm. But we're trained to think of it as alternative, I think.
Yeah.
You know, we're trained to think of like normal sex as, you know, heterosexual, you know, penis in the vagina intercourse and anything outside of that.
Well, that leaves out a lot of people.
It leaves out so much, so much.
Like Dainsen says, many people who think about BDSM, they think about the dark dungeon and stuff like this. But many people do BDSM that does not use pain or restraint, because mm-hmm. BDSM is something else too. There's the exchange of power. We can think about people who do the schoolgirl and daddy type of situation. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You know, so, I mean, BDSM could be is quite wide, and it could be a lot of things.
Or could be like the master and the pup play. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. Again, that's a scene. It's a scenario.
It's a scenario, and again, it's built on a power exchange, right?
Right.
For a lot of pups, you're the taking on the submissive role. You want someone to give you orders. You want to be controlled, and there are a lot of people who get off on that kind of power exchange.
Exchange of power.
Right, and that's really at the base of it all, regardless of how you practice it, like what the image is, whether you're a puppy, a baby, a schoolgirl, a dominatrix, whatever it is. It's just playing. Mm-hmm. It's playing a role.
Yeah, it's playing and it's exchanging power.
What do you think?
Well, I think there's a lot of people who do BDSM that don't consider it BDSM because it isn't the dungeon, because it isn't, you know, nobody starts off with a dungeon. You know, you start off, you know, just the kind of an awkward thing, just, you know, a spanking. You know, no, before you get to the you know, the more intense scenes. Or the more involved scenes. And it's amazing how many people say, well, you know, we don't do anything like that. We, you know, we have done blindfolds and scarves and, oh, yeah, there's that spanking and that, but we wouldn't do BDSM.
Right, but it's all part of it. Actually, a texter says it would be interesting to have different proponents of BDSM be interviewed on the show to contribute more diverse perspectives. Well, that's one of the reasons we invited Dane on the show, because it's a different form of that. We've also had I've had a professional dominatrix on the show. We've had mm-hmm. different things, and what I have found is it's really pretty much the same. Like it's not. Like BDSM
well, a lot of
is
times
BDSM.
The kind of the social rules have to be the same to make
right.
it work. So, you know, it has to be consenting. You have to talk about it. You have to, you know, things like that. And that's no matter what your kink, that's kind of something that runs through a successful, healthy relationship or scene even.
Right.
You well, know, so.
Maybe we occasionally, you know, maybe we'll bring in people who do maybe practice different things that would find it interesting.
Sure.
I don't know what other avenues or things. Like I don't know personally. You're going to have to bring them to us.
So many avenues. There are so many.
Okay. Well, let's grow this thing, you know. Let's try. But I have found that it's true. The rules tend to be the same no matter who I speak to in terms of the practice of it. Maybe just people's experience of it is different. And one of the reasons why Pierre and Catherine have been here for so long is because they have been in this lifestyle for many, many, many years, but also because you run a website that connects with so many people and you have run your own community groups, your munches, mm-hmm. where you have met with so many practitioners of BDSM that in my books, you're some of the most experienced in the city.
Well, we certainly, you know, learned in a lot over the years and continue to learn. You know, we're still meeting people. There's still people that write us really regularly from the website. Yes.
From all over the world. And this is what's so interesting, because different values, different people, different background. And for some of them, I remember talking to this lady who's a Muslim. At some point, she sent us a picture of her without her burqa. Mm-hmm. And I realized for her to send a picture of her with her hair was something extremely important for her. But for us, like, yeah, she has hair.
right. But that's it can be an exchange of power thing.
Well, it,
too,
actually,
right?
It was in this case, yeah. But it's, right. I mean, this is what's so interesting about this.
Yeah. Well, we've also had a submissive on the program. We've had one of Catherine's submissive.
Yes.
On the program
yes.
as well, talking
and
about
we've
her
had
experiences.
One of Pierre and I's together, and we've had
friends
that were submissives.
Yes. So you know, we have had a variety of different people. This is an interesting question. They recently have been talking about this whole spanking issue, I guess, on the news. And I wonder if the people that get into spanking were spanked as children. Is there a connection even?
I think sometimes there is.
Okay.
Sometimes there is. It's a, for, you know, people's sexuality and how they get kink or how they get kind of like wired the way they get wired is often things that'll trigger, you know, from their youth or their childhood. And although it might not have been sexualized at the time, as they get older, it changes because it's a power dynamic, first of all, and it's stimulating, you know, and there's also kind of a taboo about it, which is very exciting for a lot of people. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely. We've got Pierre and Catherine of BDSMCircle.com. If you are a BDSM practitioner, by the way, we would love your perspective, and we'd love to hear from you. 514-790-0800. Share with us. Share some of your experiences, be it if they're different than what you're hearing here, if they're the same. We'd love to hear from you. So it's an open call to BDSM practitioners. We also have Dane Stewart, who is a director and playwright. He's an advocate. He manages Montreal's pop group, Woof MTL, which we'll find out about that kind of kink after we check in with our newsroom here on CJD 800.
The following program contains mature subject matter. Listener discretion is advised.
It's Sex Out Loud, and you're welcome to listen in. Passion on CJAD 800.
Tonight we've got our BDSM panel. We've got Pierre and Catherine of BDSMCircle.com and Dane Stewart, who is a director, playwright, advocate, and manages Montreal's pop group Woof MTL. We'll talk about that, but let me just get to some of your text. Actually, no, let's ask Dane about this, because there was an earlier text that kind of referred to maybe pop play as possibly like a psychological disorder or something. How do you respond to something like that?
Well, I work from probably the same definition of like a psychiatric illness as you do. And mm-hmm. you were talking about this before, that for an expression of sexuality to be deemed an illness, it either has to be, you know, an illegal or non-consensual behavior, or it has to be causing distress to the person who is engaging with it or the people in their
or affecting their life in a negative way.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so pop play for me, it definitely doesn't have those negative effects. In fact, I'd say it's the opposite. It has a lot of positive effects on my life.
So describe it first for listeners who are just tuning in or have never heard the term pop play, and pop as in puppy, mm-hmm. by the way. Okay.
Like puppy or dog. Human pup play is a form of role play where one person or multiple people can take on the role of a dog, a puppy, a pet in a form of sexual play or in a relationship. Generally, people get pleasure from the exchange of power. So oftentimes a pup will act submissive, will take orders from their master or their handler, as we call it. And there's also a big element of play to this. It's very animalistic. You're letting your instincts take over. People call it the pup headspace. You're sort of living in the present as a dog. And there can be a lot of... it's almost meditative for a lot of people to get mm-hmm. into that sort of headspace. And for me, it can be, you know, very relaxing and very beneficial as a person who's very anxious in my day-to-day life. That can be a moment of release from that. Mm-hmm. It doesn't involve, you know, real dogs. It's just
exactly,
role play.
Right. Nobody's interested in having a real dog as a sexual partner. Let's be
exactly.
clear about that. Okay.
Yeah, but it is just that form of role play and that power exchange and that playfulness that comes from that. And, you know, you see a lot of people who engage in other types of role play that might not necessarily be sexual, but are definitely pleasurable. Any sort of like Comic-Con where people are doing cosplay, they're dressing up as some other character. You know, that's a fun experience. Like you're just playing around and you're having fun. And I
right.
think people often think that like some sort of sexual play can't have that element of play or that element of fun to it. But at its heart, like putt play is, there's a lot of that to it. It doesn't necessarily have to be about the sex.
And you brought up a good term called cosplay, which is costume play, basically, mm-hmm. and can involve elements of sexuality or not, mm-hmm. right? And it's people putting on roles is basically what it's all about.
A lot of people who dress in cosplay, actually, when you look carefully, they use BDSM element too. They would mm-hmm. have a collar, they would have a cuff or
corset.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Very nice for us.
Well, for practice. I think the bottom line is there's different ways of practicing is mm-hmm. really what we're learning here tonight. This texter writes, having started out in BDSM communities in Quebec, as your circle expands, i.e. parties in the tri-state area, so I guess in New York or whatever, you encounter judges, actors, and power brokers in the U.S. who seem to lead very normal lives. And if I look at the three of you who are intelligent, you have normal jobs, you work, you write, you have a life, right? You've got other things, that this is one part of that life, but it doesn't necessarily define who you are in your day-to-day life.
To my opinion, this is the way it should be. If BDSM becomes your life, it becomes a problem.
It has to be integrated.
Yes.
So that, you know, you're still paying your bills and buying groceries and, you know,
going to work
and then going to a dungeon party. You know, it all has to be balanced to be healthy.
Right. And okay, so then it comes back to that psychiatric thing. Mm-hmm. When any sexual behavior takes over your life.
Bad.
That's where it becomes unhealthy. When it stops you from having relationships, when it prevents you from being able to work or go to school, when it becomes obsessive to the point of not being able to function in other ways, then we call it a mental illness. And that could be any kind of sexual activity. And we would probably fit that under sexual compulsive disorders that can be acted out in a multitude of ways, whether it's voyeurism, exhibitionism, which can be practiced consensually, but this is where it can get into the non-consensual stuff, or, I mean, there's all kinds of different ways, right, of expression.
Yep.
All right, here's a very interesting question. How does, and I don't know if you can answer it, but how does BDSM practice differ between religion or culture? Is it accepted more among Western Soviet than other Eastern or Middle Eastern, for example? So I don't know how much information you have about the cultural differences, but you can certainly share with us who are the visitors to your site, BDSM Circle.
Well, and who writes us? And who writes me as a female dom. And for a while, I was getting a lot of Muslim and
Middle Eastern
men. And I think it was because in the culture, the woman is typically in the more submissive role. And so it was... you know, it's almost like a special taboo or, you know.
It was from men.
Yes.
Men who wanted to be submissive.
And we did write back and forth for a while with a couple of Muslim women.
Mm-hmm.
And they do have a different view on it because their society tends to be in where women are already in more of a submissive role.
Right.
What we didn't see was a lot of female Muslim dominatrixes.
No, we haven't.
I don't think I've ever met one. I'm sure they exist. Don't get me wrong if you're out there.
Right.
Actually, if you're out there, call in because that'd be neato.
Right.
But it is typically in some cultures, there's already a more pronounced kind of hierarchy or etiquette of authority than there are in our culture where it's like everybody's kind of like, you know, on the same level. We don't have castes. Mm-hmm. We don't have, you know, there is, of course, different levels, but it's usually economic.
Right.
You know, whereas in there, in religious, there's different levels. So it gets kind of a little more complicated, but it's still done, I think, quite a bit. It's just done, you know, behind more closed
very
doors.
Very closed doors. And I think we've talked over the years about the people who come to you, and you have told me you've had every religious community.
Absolutely. And, you know, we regularly talk with, with more than one religion, you know, be it a rabbi or a reverend mm-hmm. or a pastor. We've spoken to them at length, because they'll actually, their parishioners or their flock or however you want to call it, have come to them and talked to them about it. So they've talked to us. So there's some really interesting, you know, traumas. Like, you know, sometimes within a marriage, this can help save a marriage. If you're not, you know, sexually compatible with just plain vanilla, and suddenly you put BDSM into it, and it can make all the world of difference. And if it
can also,
you know,
have the opposite effect.
Yes, right. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. But I mean, there are Christian groups that are BDSM.
Really?
Absolutely. There's quite a few.
Discussion group called Christian BDSM group, actually. That was
yes, there's a few, and most of them that I know of are in the southern states.
That's where we usually find the states that are the most repressed is where we end up finding often some of the more extreme behaviors, which is interesting. But again, it crosses religion, it crosses culture, and it crosses socioeconomic status,
absolutely,
professions, as this texter wrote, judges, actors, power brokers.
And by the way, there's lots of actors and people in the media. Oh, you'd be so surprised. And I'm not looking at Dr. Lori when I say that.
Thank you.
I'm not outing anybody. And there's nothing to out there anyways, no offense. But you'd be amazed at how many people that are of a high profile, they just don't go to the public dungeons.
We'll talk about how to create your own non-dungeon, like how to engage in BDSM if you want to at home without having to create this whole big 50 Shades dungeon with my panel, my BDSM panel tonight here.
We strip away the stigmas every night with passion on CJAD 800.
Last couple of minutes left here with my kink panel. We've got Dane Stewart, playwright, and also he runs the pup play community group called Woof MTL. We have Pierre and Catherine of BDSM Circle. Okay, last question for you guys this evening. When we think of, oftentimes, when we think of bondage, sadomasochism, all of that, our minds, as just the population here, think of 50 Shades of Grey and the dungeon that was in 50 Shades of Grey, right? That's what we think of because we don't have exposure to it. We don't have, many of us do not have access to people who will talk about it with us in our everyday. Except for me, because I get to interview people, which is great, but most of us don't. So that's our thought right away when we think of that. But then we look at the studies that show how many people are actually interested in it and how many people practice it. For sure, not everyone has a dungeon.
You don't need a dungeon.
Okay. So that's where I want to go with that now. So if people, you don't need a dungeon. What do you need?
Okay. To start, and I'm going to quote Catherine, the dungeon.
Why don't you just let her talk then? Well, she's right there.
Sure. I'll say to start. You know what? You need the right attitude. You need to both get in the moment, and a lot of it's mental.
Okay. So the mental.
So it's the ambiance. So it's you know, candlelight and a little bit of outfits, which you can, you know, some fishnet stockings and a little corset thing, and oh, you're off to a great start.
Well, get a lot of people do that anyway. Get a little, the collar part maybe not.
Get a little collar. You know, have a you know. Get a wooden hairbrush, use the back of it. You know, there's
lots of stuff in the house.
Lots of stuff in the house. Go to a dollar store. Hey, and Reno Depot is your friend.
But you have to know, I'm sure there's plenty of YouTube videos out there now.
There sure are.
That tell you how to make things or build things safely, I would imagine.
Yes. But, I mean, often what people are going to do, they're going to have a secret chest or
yes.
a closet yes. somewhere where they're going to hide all their toys. One of our friend had a closet where he would roll this hanger thing where he would suspend all of their fetish clothing and all their toys. But when it was not in use, he would just put it in the closet, lock the damn thing.
Right, right. Yeah, you don't want your kids rummaging through your closet either.
And mm-hmm. from time to time, the kid would go to grandma, so he would roll out the thing, and they would just, you know. And it was great. He showed this to us, and then we just went, wow, that.
It's like a dungeon in a bag.
It was.
I mean, there was no dungeon there, but they could transform one of their room easily in something.
Right.
In their case, it was the basement, so they had ring, and the ring was for hanging clothing.
Right, not really. Know? Yeah, exactly.
But that's the thing.
They took out their swing and, you know, clipped it on.
It.
Right. Now, I attended your play, Dane, The History of Sexuality, which I thought was phenomenal. It was great. And I learned a lot. I learned a lot about pup play. And there were costumes and face masks and things like that. Like, how often, like, is that used in that kind of role play?
It's fairly common. So a big element for a lot of people who practice pup play is the gear, as we call it. If you Google pup play, you might find some interesting things. Don't do it at work.
Right.
Images of these pup hoods that people can get. They're made out of leather. They might be made out of neoprene.
Okay.
And they sort of give you, you pull them over your head and it gives you sort of the appearance of a dog. And there are a couple stores that sell them here in Montreal.
Okay.
Men's Room by Armada, Mr. Bear, right here in the gay village. But they really aren't no gear is necessary to do pup play. We say it's about the headspace. It's about actually just engaging in the play. And for people who are, you know, trying to get into it and feel like they need the dungeon, like you absolutely don't. You can go to a pet store. I'm dead serious. You'll save so much money doing this. Go to a pet store, buy a collar.
For a big dog.
Buy a collar for a
big
dog.
Big necks.
Wink at the cashier. Who knows? Who knows? He works at a pet store, so get a leash. And that can be enough for your first experience. And I mean, like, I'm in my 20s, so I don't have like a lot of access to dungeon spaces. So it's about having fun. It's about experimenting and being creative. Like, I remember one of my first BDSM experiences, I went to someone's house and the first thing he told me to do was just strip down and sweep his floor. I just had to do chores in his house. And it
Catherine makes people do that.
I sure do.
It can be so stimulating. I have to watch my language on the radio.
Yes, you do.
again, it comes back to that service-oriented, that power exchange. Like, there's so much you can do outside of a dungeon.
You make it more interesting if you put some shackle on that person and they have to drag a chain or...
A nice 50-foot chain around the house.
Okay, yeah. now you're like, that's extreme for me. Like, that would be... I get the things around the house that you could use and people can use...
ties,
but okay.
What's extreme is when you tell
you see,
them
it's
that...
not that extreme to you,
no.
But to some of us listening, that could be very extreme.
But that's, I'll tell you, it's a lot more fun to have a shackle dragging around a shackle sweeping the floor. Right, it helps put them in the headspace. It's not that expensive.
We all have our ideas of fun, and I totally respect yours. But I love when I hear, "Oh, it could be a lot of fun," and I'm thinking that doesn't sound like fun to me. But this is why we're all different.
Well, you see, it's fun for me to have somebody else do it.
Yeah, but the one doing it,
they're loving it. I'm telling you,
they're loving it because we always make it in a way that it becomes sexual because they're dressed in a certain way. Or we're playing the game. The example about the submissive with the chain is the fun part is when you tell them that they cannot make noises because you're trying to do something and you don't want to hear the chain. I mean, you're going to see amazing.
You know, this is where I end with to each his own. Like, seriously, to each his own. Whatever floats your boat, and we shouldn't yuck other people's yums. Basically, and even though they may not be ours, right? It's yucky to us, it's yummy to them, and that's okay. So no judgment here, as long as it's done safely. As we always say, safe and consensual. Safe, sane, and consensual. Dane, where can people find you if they want to know about pup stuff?
So you can find Montreal's group for Human Pups on Facebook. We're WoofMTL. You can also find my work as an artist on my website, talkingdogproductions.ca.
Wonderful. And Pierre and Catherine are always available at bdsmcircle.com. You can email them with questions and all of that. Thanks, guys, for being here. Always appreciated. Thanks to Dave Simon, our technical producer. And thanks to all of you for spending your hour with us, or any part of the hour with us. You can connect with me on social media at Dr. Lori Battito, or my website, drlori.com. You can send me emails throughout the week. Happy to answer them at the beginning of every show. Lori at drlori.com, or feel free to text in. Coming up next on CJD, the CTV National News. Have a great rest of the evening, and remember to live your life with passion.